Today's August 30th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $78,815.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
How's it going, Rick?
Not too bad.
We had a pretty good week again.
I mean, it's held. I mean, run up a little bit, right?
Yeah, we'll see. Like, I mean, if we continue to remain sideways for a time. But no, actually, yeah, it wasn't too bad. We did break above 80,000, right?
Right.
What day was that? You messaged me on that when that happened.
That was Friday.
That was Friday?
Yeah, it was Friday, so it was just a couple of days ago, and I was just like, well, you know, I'm not like constantly watching the price of Bitcoin. I'll just check on it, you know, during the day at work if I have a break, and I was like, whoa, it's above 80.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and actually, we got as high as 81,467. I felt like I was like, man, I don't know, 80,000 is going to be such a resistance level, and obviously, there still is some resistance there, but not only did we get above 80, but we got into 81, so that was pretty good news, actually. I figured there was going to be a lot more. I thought it was going to take quite a few more days, but man, that was pretty quick that we broke above that.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of wind at Bitcoin's back right now.
Yeah. Which is, there's a lot of conflicting things that we'll get into as kind of this episode goes on, but I thought that was kind of interesting. How are our theoreticals looking right now?
Theoreticals ain't doing too bad. If you would have bought $3,000 of Bitcoin back in October 2023, that $3,000 could have netted you 0.0885 Bitcoin, and that $3,000 investment's now worth $6,975.
That's pretty good. So
yeah,
that has still been Bitcoin. That has still been such a good buy.
Yeah, well, it's about timing it. You know, you don't want to buy when things are closer to the all-time high. Granted, the second theoretical buy, you historically, buying at the halving was always a good idea. This one, I mean, it's not like it's been a terrible idea.
Yeah.
It was $1,000 when the price was $64,000 on the last halving, April 19th, 2024, which is over 2 years ago now. That, you know, $64,000, got $1,000, 0.01564 Bitcoin. And we've seen it go almost double, and then we've seen it come back down where we were negative. And but today, that $1,000 is now worth $1,233, so it's not doing too bad.
And I think the interesting thing about those theoreticals is that really kind of highlights time in the market as opposed to timing the market. I mean, part of it is timing, yeah, but the amount of time that you can just let it sit. And I mean, I think it's true of the traditional stock market as well. Like, you may have certain days where, yeah, you look at it and kind of in the short term. And it's funny because when we think of short term is like anything less than 6 months. And then they say long term is anything greater than that. But like that initial buy from October of, what was that, 2023?
Yeah.
That 0.0885, I mean, that still is just a beautiful, beautiful purchase time. Yeah, and it's just been reflected well too.
Well, and that's the thing, that Bitcoin's never even been in that area. I think it was around $37,000 per coin at that time, and the rumors were starting to get, I wouldn't say they were confirmed, but all the rumors started churning that the ETFs with BlackRock and everyone else was coming in. And you know, one thing, we looked at it, it was about sub 30, then it was, next thing you know, it's like 40, then it's 50, and then it's 60. And
yep,
we never got back into the 30s ever since.
No. And it was, and that was one of those, I remember when we recorded those episodes, like the information at the time was BlackRock, you know, and their ETF and how they had done all the application. And I remember we had done an episode where basically BlackRock had never been denied, like when they applied for an ETF.
Yeah, that doesn't look shady at all, but yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like that was your check. Like, sure, could it have happened that they were going to deny it? Possible, but unlikely. It's been nuts. And then when we look at the far side, because we were looking at the ETF flows too, kind of before we got going, and we had started to see some really good numbers going into the last time we recorded, but we've seen almost $1 billion since the last time we recorded into the ETF market.
Yeah. I mean, for a while we were looking at mostly negative headwinds, but now it's like it, ever since what day did it take off? It took off on the 19th. But even before that, the price of Bitcoin took off on the 19th. But the ETFs since the 17th have been consistently positive.
Yeah.
And big time, you know, those days when the price skyrocketed.
Yeah. And we had a slight sell-off on Friday, which was, I mean, that we got up that 81,000 mark, right? And we saw, you know, 200 million sell-off. But that was after consecutive days of pretty good inflows. So, and of course, BlackRock is the biggest contributor to all that. You know what else is kind of interesting too? Like Grayscale's really kind of slowed down all the way around.
Well, I'm just wondering how much they have left.
That's a good question.
That is very just for a quick history lesson, they were the ones who got their, they did a ETF purchase type, or it wasn't an ETF, but they did a big purchase back when, what, the price of Bitcoin was at $4,000 or something like that after the crash?
Yeah, they were kind of the first ETF before ETFs were really kind of legalized. I don't know how else to put it, but like they were starting to compile that money a long time ago. And yeah, you're right. Like it was years of accumulation. Like they kept on buying. I remember, I want to say it was part of the market whenever we got up to 20,000 and kind of above, they were just like, well, it's all because Grayscale is buying like crazy. So they were accumulating a lot of Bitcoin. And then I think the thing really, and we've talked about this before, the thing that really kind of messed them up was their maintenance fees was so high compared to everybody else's.
Well, you could tell from their maintenance fees that they were looking to sell.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. And, you know, they made a handsome profit. It's just now a question of how much do they have left?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And how much, I mean, iBit has taken over from that. And I don't know, there's a lot of nice flows going on. Even ARK Invest had some good numbers. I mean, it's not as big as BlackRock. BlackRock is still taking the lion's share, but I don't know, pretty crazy. We looked at the news this week, and we were talking about that kind of before and last week too, like the 81,000 mark. We hit up to 81, and then we're starting to see a little bit of a retracement, which is not uncommon going into the weekend. And there's typically, like, whenever you see Bitcoin do those flash moves up, you're typically going to see a retest back down to see where there's a little bit of support down below. And we did get as low as, what did we get to yesterday? Actually, this was on Friday evening. We got down to 76,860. And then there was a giant wake back up. So there was a lot of support right around the $77,000 range. So that's not uncommon to see that kind of a retest to see, you know, where the floor is right now. Open interest of Bitcoin kind of opened up to 54 billion, showing strong derivatives engagement and bullish positioning. Technical structure remains bullish, price above the 20-day, the 50-day, and the 200-day moving average. The Sarcastic RSI is above 73, 83, and the MACD showing positive strength is intact. So right now we're seeing support right around $77,000 to $74,000, which is well above the 200-day zone of $68,000 to $69,000. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. We still have, I think, September 15th, the Clarity Act is supposed to get voted through, or at least they called for a vote at that time. I don't know for sure if it's actually going to happen. And then, of course, we have the Middle East geopolitical, I don't know what you want to call it, other than a fiasco at this point that's still going on. Yeah, quagmire, boondoggle, just a mess. And then ETF flows, obviously, we already kind of touched on that. So those are looking really good right now. Bitcoin is coiling under a major resistance shelf. Market structure says bullish and that it's not done. A lot of the analysts are saying that when you look at the charts. low liquidations plus high open interest equals market gearing up, not unwinding. And September's loaded with a lot of possible, like you had said in the beginning, possible tailwinds kind of that can push Bitcoin forward.
Well, it's kind of interesting that things are happening right now. I mean, just with today's date, it's the 30th, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the close is at the end of this week. But then tomorrow's the 31st, and it's kind of also interesting to look at the monthly close.
Yeah.
So I think if it can get above 81 and stay there, I mean, I think that's basically going to be the new floor going forward.
Yeah, we really could be rallying into the Labor Day weekend, right?
Yeah. But if it fails or for whatever reason, I don't know. I don't see that happening, but you just never know with the markets. But if it fails, I mean, we could be going back down towards 60, who knows, or maybe 70.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
No, and I think you're right. Like if we can't get, and it may, you never know how long it'll take Bitcoin for them to continue to try and rally and drop and rally and drop before they give up the ghost. You know, we've talked about this before where it'll start to build a floor and it's like a pogo stick. And every time it bounces off it, like if it can't get higher up, eventually it's going to go back through it. And right now we're looking like we're trying to build that floor again, kind of at these higher levels, but you never know how long it could stay there. It could stay there for just a day. And then all of a sudden you're off to the races again. You're at 85, 90,000. I don't know. Like right now it's funny because the analysts are saying Bitcoin is trading like it knows what's coming. So
yeah. I don't know. Very interesting times. And that's the thing. If let's say, that is hypothetical, if whatever the low was in July, it was like 57. That could be that'd be kind of a surprisingly high low. You know what I mean? Like most people were expecting, including us, were expecting somewhere around 50, if not lower, but 57. And that would be the earliest that a winter has ended, you know, or at least when we found the bottom. So I don't want to call it, you know, that's what we're going to see. This is the end of it. Now it's off to spring and summer. But it's just the ETFs, really, them getting into this market has changed things so much that, you know, you kind of feel topsy-turvy. I don't feel confident in calling any direction anymore.
No, I think you're right. I mean, because we were expecting, I know we had recorded and we were expecting probably, I think we had said kind of end of September, middle October, kind of starting to see that really that last kind of shakeout. And then, you know, we'd really get that bottom in and then start to kind of grind back up slowly but surely November into December. And I don't know at this point, like, it's so hard to call, but it looks like the bottom is in.
It kind of does. Well, I don't know. October's always full of surprises.
Yeah.
That's why they call them October surprises. So we'll see how things go, but you know, it's just an interesting time to watch this happen. And just, I mean, it's just really surreal time to be alive. You just look around, you just scratch your head.
I'm glad. Surreal, I guess, is one way to put it. World ending, Armageddon, like that's what comes to my mind. But surreal, yeah, I think that works too. So then one of the other things that we were going to talk about today is there's been a lot of movement with X right now. Like we know, like Elon Musk, like for those that don't know, maybe PayPal, when he originally envisioned it, he wanted to call it X, and he wanted to develop obviously this financial system. And he's slowly, over the past few years, he's been introducing different aspects of the payment systems into the X platform itself. There's recently they were offering debit card for verified people on X. And like when you get a debit card through X, they send you out a card and they're giving you $15. One of the other things is that they're in active talks to start to use stablecoins to pay content creators on X. So for those of you that don't know, like X does a profit sharing kind of model where as you produce content and it gets a lot of interaction, which our content does not, unfortunately, you know, we're just not popular.
Engagement. But
yeah, when you get engagement, like you get paid by advertisers that kind of feed off your off your feed of off your content that you create. So there's been a big push to actually kind of get that where they want to use stable coins. And that's not only good for them, but it's also good for the emerging markets around the world. It's a lot easier and a lot faster to pay these people that way. So stable coins already, it's a $300 billion market cap. And it's widely used for fast, cheap transactions across the globe. That was part of why the Genius Act was kind of passed, was that the United States really wanted to capitalize on that and still keep the dollar dominance in the global markets. And I think that was kind of their in, was with the stable coins, and they could then decide, you know, well, you're going to have this much in reserves, those types of things. I always felt like it was going to also be another pressure relief valve for the current markets. But that's my own thought. There's nothing that's really backing that up. So I guess even SpaceX is using stablecoins to some extent for Starlink in emerging markets around the world for payments. So that way people can pay for their Starlink subscription through stablecoins.
It's kind of an interesting thought. I mean, you know, there's a lot of emerging markets where your local currency is just basically worthless. So, I can see that being useful for them. So,
yeah, I mean, it's they don't have to take on the risk of using some sort of currency that's deflating it, you know, or inflating at ridiculous prices, and then, you know, and they get it back in U.S. dollars, which is convertible right away and usable right away.
Yeah, I can see that being useful for them. As I don't know, it's just an interesting wrinkle how things are unfolding. So. That's cool.
Yeah. And then Musk actually hired Benji Taylor, who's a crypto veteran with a wallet and DeFi experience, as the head of design. And it's also tied to XAI at SpaceX. So excuse me on that. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. They're removing the original revenue sharing with the content reward program. So I don't know. I think it's a big signal that X is becoming a crypto native platform, which I think will be kind of interesting if it starts to incorporate Bitcoin transactions and all that stuff within the X platform. That may eliminate a lot of the needs of some of the other Lightning channels and those types of things for payments. Stablecoin rails solve the biggest problem in global creator payouts, and that's speed and friction. And Musk companies already use stablecoins, so now he's just extending it into the X infrastructure, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's kind of I don't know, we'll go on a rant about X, but, you know, I do hop on there every once in a while, but it's just such a crap show of just people making crap up. And I don't know, like, I remember Dolly Parton passed away last week, and you saw every single different angle on her, whether she's like a reptilian, you know, involved in trafficking of kids and all this crazy stuff, to where she was like basically a saint. And, you know, I have no offense to, you know, I was, as a fan, I mean, I didn't listen to a lot of her music, but she was always just somebody, you know, she was a cultural icon.
Yeah,
everyone knew who she was. But that just kind of, I don't know. Being a content creator and being a popular one is usually just, I don't know, being up bombastic and being a little too, being a little extreme. Edgy. Extreme.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, there's no reward for being reasonable on X. So, I don't know, that's just my thoughts on that.
No, I find the most viral, engaging content creators are typically, it's a race to the bottom. It's whoever's going to say the worst thing. It's whoever's going to, you know, show the skin. It's whoever's going to, like, it's always a race to the bottom to get the most clicks.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting, you know, bringing up Dolly Parton, like the ideologues that are trying to capture, like, well, she was left-leaning, or she was right-leaning. Like, everybody's trying to make her part of their camp, and like, you can't take her, this is ours. And it's like, she was just a person, man. Calm down.
Yep. And she went out of her way to not be culture. I'm pretty sure she was One Direction, but she, as a business, she knew she would alienate half of her fans by picking a side. So she made that part of her career decision not to do that. But Yeah.
No, and that's smart.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
The moment you start to kind of alienate anybody and you just kind of keep it vague and out there, that's the best way to be, in my opinion. I love artists.
You know, we're pretty good at alienating both sides, talking shit about them. So, yeah, that's maybe pretty dumb, but I digress.
So the last thing we wanted to kind of bring up today was there was a lot of news that came out of Jackson Hole. Kevin Warsh, new Fed chair, was there. And it looks like he's getting pretty hawkish with his look at what's going to happen with the market. We know there's always a big meeting in September as to what the direction of the rate hikes is going to be. So right now, you know, yields, we talked about that the last episode. It's up like higher than it's been in the past 2 years. So right now the rate hike odds have risen from 36% prior to his speech in Jackson Hole to 58% that he's going to increase interest rates. Warsh is stating he rejects forward guidance, warning of a hall of mirrors problem where the markets and the Fed watch each other instead of the data, which I think, like, when you look at the White House and political economists right now, that's a really big part of what they're saying, is that they look at the stock markets and they're like, oh, we're doing great. No, we're not. People are suffering. And we see it everywhere. And a big part of that too, we were kind of talking about that before the episode got going, is when we look at everything, like all items for CPI, we're sitting at 3.4%. They're expecting it's going to be 3.8% for the month of August. I mean, it may come in lower. That's great. But the problem is the energy.
Yeah.
And when you look at energy as a whole, it's up 14.7%. But when you drill into it, the energy commodities are up 24.7%. And the only thing that brings it down kind of as an average is the energy services is only up 4.3%. Oil is up 39.1%. So it's that's what's hurting everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if...
Yep.
And people act like, well, food and groceries, well, oh man, they're so high. It's like, you realize, like, part of the cost that you have to pay at the grocery store is the transportation.
Yeah.
If oil is high.
I mean, food is getting trucked in from everywhere. And a lot of it's coming from, like, South America.
Yeah.
You know, fruit and veggies, and then beef is just, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be kind of curious to see. We'll have to, obviously focus on that coming around the middle of September after we get CPI numbers for August. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, and at the same time, corporate profits are booming. They're up 22.8% year over year. So,
wow.
And that's the thing. Like, and when you look at the White House, that's all they're looking at is the stock market. They don't care what the common man is going through. It goes back to Pam Bondi's big quote, right? Well, the stock market's over 50, or the Dow Jones is over 50,000. When you're talking about Epstein victims.
Yeah. Ignore Epstein. It's all about 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be really, I mean, that's the thing. Donald Trump is kind of a marketer, so he focuses always on the positives and that kind of stuff. But man, I really do think the Republican Party is getting set up for a slaughter this midterm election. So.
So too. And I think it's unfortunate because the biggest thing that's coming out of the Dems is the socialist Democrats that are coming up.
No, they're being taken over by radicals.
Yeah.
And who really want the government to own the means of production. And I don't know if I said this last time, but that is the worst idea in the history of humanity. That has led to, you know, death, hundreds of millions of deaths in every country it's been tried in.
Yeah.
When you go from Russia or USSR to China to, you know, South or North Korea, Cambodia. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Yep. Yeah. And the big drivers right now, like within corporations, it's CapEx. So they're rising fast. And the the amount of money basically in the CapEx, whenever you talk about that, you're talking about a capital expense. So it's investments into infrastructure and those types of things for the corporation. And it's all being driven by data centers. They're saying that the labor markets are stable right now with unemployment at 4.1%. But wage growth, I don't think is there. They're saying that recession odds for 2026 remain very low, only at 9%, which I don't know if we've ever been out of a recession, but the problem is because of the market, they don't see it that way. Warsh just wasn't talking tough. Markets really believed what he said. Inflation is still too hot, but the trend lines are improving. That's why September is a coin flip. Corporate profits and CapEx are booming. The Fed has room to hike and room to pause. So that's kind of where we're at. I think that's going to play a lot. And it's interesting too that we're seeing Bitcoin rally under that kind of talk, which is the opposite of what Bitcoin ever does.
Yeah. No, I think there's, I mean, I think Warsh, we have a, give him a lot of credit for this latest boon with, you know, purchasing a lot more of those old bonds. It looks like we're turning on the money printer. And eventually, I mean, just we're at $40 trillion in debt now in America.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's some huge print is coming. I mean, we just don't know when, but it's going to be unleashed on us.
Yeah. You know what scares me the most about coming up with this midterms and the democratic socialist ideals that are coming? The fact that they want to tax unrealized gains on things, on people. And I know people say that, well, you know, it's kind of, that's a rich man's game. And it's like, obviously, they're going to market it initially in the beginning to just be towards people over a certain income threshold. But once they have their foot in that door, they never are happy and they never stop with just whatever that early group is. Like, oh yeah, no, they're just going after people that are making $5 million a year. The problem is that's now true. You've set the precedent.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. To expand on your point, like it starts as one thing. I mean, the income tax, when it was passed, they only targeted like the top like 1%. I was like, only they're going to pay this income tax. Next thing you know, like the top 1% has all these different shell games. They know how to move their money with accountants and lawyers and all this other stuff. And they pay, I mean, I'm not saying they don't pay any taxes, but, you know, like the really elite, they don't pay as near as much. Whereas the middle class, you know, and, you know, any wage earners that are making decent money, those are the ones who are getting hammered by income taxes. Mm-hmm. So when they start doing that unrealized gains, I'm pretty sure the big dogs that it's supposed to go after are going to have some type of loophole written into the tax code where they can escape it, where it's you and I and anybody, you know, just trying to are doing halfway decent. That's right. Going to be the main demographic that's going to feed these taxes.
Exactly. And that's my fear, is that it's you're right. For those of you that are probably sitting there at the very bottom, you may not get affected by it. But the problem is if you're doing halfway decent, and because you receive your money in a salary at dollars rather than stock options or whatever the case may be, because that's the big loophole for a lot of the big guys, right? Is they get stock options where their net worth is like seen as this huge amount, but the cash isn't quite the same thing. And then people that just still get paid like a salary, they get taxed before they even see the money. Like that's taken from them beforehand.
Right.
I don't know. It scares me. And I guess maybe not even so much for me, like, but maybe for me, maybe for kids, but like that, just once you open that door, man, it's hard to close them.
Yeah. No, I think that if they do manage to do that, I think they will basically remove any ladder, any hope of, I mean, the American dream seems like it's already dead, but that would be the death nail, last nail all in the coffin.
And you're talking about moving up in the class structure, right? Like being able to go from being poor to getting up into that upper echelon.
Yep. I think you would basically, we're going to have a weird caste system after that, economic caste system, and you're just not escaping one way or the other.
And it's going to strip out the middle class entirely.
Indeed.
Which, I mean, and that's been getting smaller and smaller and smaller every year. I mean, it's getting crazy. And depending on where you're at, like even people that make six figures, depending on where they're at in the country, if they're making like the, you know, 120,000, they're not even in the middle class anymore. Like, they're not in upper middle class. That used to be pretty high upper class, like in the 80s or upper middle class.
Yeah, there's pretty rarefied air.
Yeah. And then now, like, if you're in California and that's what you're making, you're barely getting by.
Yeah. I mean, what you're not taxed with and what you have left, I mean, that's a pretty rough ride. I wouldn't want to live on that kind of salary in California, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's pretty much what we have for this week. I mean, it's really, we're going to be looking forward to what's going to be coming in September. Looks like there could be a lot of possible positive things. Like if Clarity Act gets passed, the Fed decides to hold rates, we get something out of the Strait of Hormuz that's decent, we could be looking at quite a boon for Bitcoin coming up here pretty soon.
Maybe. But then, you know, an election season rolls around, maybe it's that's the headwinds. And that's swing into power.
Man, I go back to, I want that Clarity Act passed. And I know at this point, like, it's probably going to be a Trojan horse. You know what I'm saying? Like, as much hope as I had of it in the beginning, I'm just afraid of the Democrats taking over. And then all of a sudden, crypto and Bitcoin is looked at it as this horrible thing again. I really want to see that get passed beforehand. But it could ultimately be, I mean, it could be a bad passing of legislation. It could turn it into this institutional quagmire, which we've kind of seen it become anyways. I mean, I still think there's a lot of freedom within Bitcoin just because of the way that the protocol and the network works. But you know, if these institutions are going to pass it, they found some way that they're going to be like, yep, we can profit off this as well. And God, that sounds horrible to say.
Well, it's always interesting. You just don't know which direction things are going to shake out.
Yeah. What's your prediction for when we record next week? Where do you think we'll be?
I think we'll probably be on the positive side of 80, or we're going to be pretty close. We're going to be either here or slightly better.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out and just say right now, I think we'll be above 81, maybe right at it, but I think we'll be there next week. We may be there Monday. Now, if it'll hold, so like, and that's what I'm expecting, is hold through the weekend, right? Like when we record again, I think we'll be at 81.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, looking forward to it.
Excellent. Anything else you wanted to bring up today?
I think that's it for me.
That's it for me as well. Well, we hope you all have a blessed week coming up, and we will talk to you all again soon.
Bye.